I'm Jorgen Sundberg, and you're listening to Social Media Know-How, brought to you by SM London Live, the hottest social media ticket in town, on the 11th of November at Bounce in central London. More details are available at socialmedialondon.co.uk. Now, are you looking for growth? Think you can hack it? Let's find out everything there is to know about growth hacking. Right, so I'm here with Kieran Flanagan, who is the marketing director EMEA for HubSpot, and he's also a general marketing nerd, according to his Twitter bio. He blogs at searchbrat.com, and he's also an NLP practitioner. We previously had Lisa Toner, his colleague, on this podcast, and we actually collaborated with HubSpot previously when we created a Social Superheroes ebook, which I believe is still available for downloads. Top of the morning to you, Kieran.
Top of the morning to you, Jorgen.
How do you say now, Kieran? Kieran?
Yeah, it's Kieran. I've kind of worked for lots of different US companies, and I get called multiple different variations of Kieran, so I'm not too precious about how people pronounce it.
That's great. So we want to talk about growth hacking. So my first question today is really, what exactly are growth hacks, or what is growth hacking?
Yeah, so I'm going to give you the way I use it, because growth hacking is a term that people use in all different ways at the moment, mostly because it's such a popular topic. If you write content about it, it's going to get interest. So I've seen like content hacks, there's life hacks, there's all different kinds of hacks. So the way I see growth hacks are, they're really a result of, you know, marketers experimenting with different marketing tactics until they kind of discover clever and original ones that they can use to grow their own brand, accelerate their growth. And generally the way I think about growth hacks as well is they kind of work for a defined period of time. So I think one of the biggest things around growth hacks is you discover something and we're so kind of tuned into sharing everything that works these days, because we just want to produce content, that we share something with the whole marketing world. Hey, this thing works really well, and you'll see that everyone will pick that up. And usually when there's certain saturation point, those growth hacks don't work as well. So for me, I think if I would kind of distill that into a sentence, it's really clever and original tactics that work for a defined period of time that can really accelerate your growth as a business. I can give you like two of the best known examples. I can give you other examples that maybe are lesser known later on. But there's a really famous example of Airbnb. So when Airbnb were in their early stages of growth, like their real early stages, trying to really accelerate that growth trajectory, they had this really cool hack where when you actually uploaded a bedroom to be on their platform, if you had a room you wanted to rent it out, within that form you could tick something and choose to have that automatically promoted through Craigslist. And if you think about how valuable that is for Airbnb, it gets them immediate promotion for free on Craigslist. It gets them a lot of inbound links back to their site from Craigslist. And it's also really valuable for the user because they can have their room promoted in two different places. And that was a real growth hack in the sense that I feel like the way that Sean Ellis, who kind of invented the term, meant that he ex-Dropbox and multiple other companies, and that it was a hack of like engineering and marketing. So that doesn't work anymore because I think Craigslist banned it. And then one of the other ones that are my favorite ones, and it's like way back in the day from a company that probably lots of people listening to this, the younger marketers don't know even existed, but a company called Hotmail.
Oh yeah.
So Hotmail was one of the fastest growing like email providers of all time. And one of the things that actually accelerated our growth is really simplistic. It was a signature. I don't know if you ever use Hotmail. When you sent an email, they had this little signature in your that was automatically populated into that email that just said, "P.S. I love you. Get your free email at Hotmail." And that was one of the things that they said really helped to accelerate the growth for free accounts. So they're just two examples of like those clever, original type of ideas.
So clever ideas that have a sell-by date, basically.
Yeah, well, and that's me saying that. That's not. I don't think that's widely used that they have a sell-by date. But I feel like most growth hacks, if they're shared widely among the marketing community, will stop working because they become diluted. And if everyone's doing the same thing, the actual impact of it is way less.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. And why would you say companies need to be hacking the growth?
Yeah, and I guess that instead of thinking about it as a company, you know, trying to hack their growth, and I think for to be applicable to a wider set of marketers but still as valuable, it's, you know, companies should always be running experiments to kind of figure out what tactics they can use to accelerate their growth. And I think experiment is the best way to think about it. Like, are you copy and pasting the playbook that you used from last year and just rerunning that the exact same this year? Or are you trying to find out, are there other things that you're not using that could actually really help you to grow faster? Then there's a really good example of that. So, and I'll use an example from something that would have been used way back in the day and then decided that they were bad, but they've made a comeback, which are pop-ups. So I don't know if you've noticed when you're visiting websites or blogs these days, there's a lot of different pop-ups you can actually that will actually appear. So the pop-ups made a kind of comeback in two different ways. There's when you actually go to a blog, you'll see that if you try to exit, you'll have a large pop-up that will say, hey, do you want this thing that will actually help you, you know, SEO or social media? And it forces you to make a decision, either click on yes, no. And that's actually because they figured out, like, by human psychology, if you actually force someone to make a decision yes, no, rather than just being able to X out of that, you're going to get way more signups. And the second type of pop-up that works really well at the moment is if you offer something free within the, you know, a subscription pop-up to try to get someone to describe your blog and have a monetary value. So, hey, you can get this free template. It's worth £197, dollars, euro, wherever you're from. You know, would you like to get it? Just sign up to the blog. So you'll see that I feel was, I'm going to give a lot of credit to Neil Patel, who did a lot of work on pop-ups over the last couple of years. And he shared that with everyone on how that's working. And you'll see them everywhere in that. Everyone else is using them. So I think for companies, it's how do I experiment with tactics to actually help me accelerate my growth? But also, because I've used those two examples, how do I be actually in the leading pack? Because again, these things will work less over time.
Would you also say that growth hacks are typically low cost, might even be free tactics?
I think because growth hacking is so, when you think of growth hacking, you think of startup marketing.
Yeah.
I think that's where it's found a place. And so I think a lot of the things that come out are actually low cost, different tactics you can use. Not always free. There's a lot of different types of growth hacks I've seen through social advertising and a lot of paid platforms that people, you know, again, it's just this clever way that someone's figured out how to use Twitter, Facebook, figured out how to do something with LinkedIn or all these different platforms that can actually help them accelerate their growth before that thing becomes like diluted and it no longer works anymore. So I don't think there's like a monetary value that they're free or not free. I think, again, it comes down to the idea and the like that kind of culture of experimenting.
Yeah, yeah. So tell us about the Marketer's Guide to Growth Spurts.
Okay, yeah, so this is actually, I speak a lot of conferences. I'm lucky enough to get to do that. Well, I'm lucky and unlucky because I'm very renowned at being one of the worst flyers in the world. So,
okay.
I travel a lot, but I take a lot of volume to do it. So this was it was a conference I spoke at. It actually may have been in Dublin. I put this together what I felt was a good process for marketers to start getting a little bit of experience with this kind of growth hack culture or just even experimentation and how they can use that to accelerate their growth. So, yeah, I think it went down pretty well. People can go find it on SlideShare. I'm actually doing a part two. It's the first time I've done a part two of a presentation for our inbound conference in Boston. So I'm excited to do that.
Great. And if you break this down, because I didn't attend the presentation you did originally, but I have looked at the slides, and I believe there are four steps to this guide. And could you talk us through the steps and, you know, what happens in the first step, the goal and target?
Yeah, so I broke it down into some individual steps. So the goal and targets are, you know, how do marketers set out the... I think this is one of the most important thing for marketers is actually being able to set out goals and targets. And interestingly enough, when you mentioned I was an NLP practitioner, the reason I actually did a lot of NLP training, and people may not know what it is, so I won't go into the description of that because that will take a long time, but it's something called neuro-linguistic program. It helps with a lot of different things, but I specifically did NLP training to get better at setting goals. And I feel like a lot of marketers, the reason they go wrong in things is because they're not actually good at setting the right goals. So the first step is really, you know, how do I set the goal and the target that I'm going to align myself around? So what are my most important goals over a defined period of time? So in HubSpot, our marketing team is maybe 80, 90, 100 people globally, but we still work on a monthly cadence. And every month we select like our most important goals and what's our target for that goal. So an example may be, hey, I want to grow my blog. I want to grow my blog traffic over the course of this month. And my target to achieve is I want to get a 10% increase in that blog traffic from the previous month. Or it's going to be something like, I want to improve the number of people who engage with, you know, the second email of a lead nurture workflow. And I want to improve that engagement by 0.5%. So what you're doing there is you're setting really clear goals, very clear targets. So they're the most important things for you to do in that given month that will help you accelerate your growth. And I feel like that's why that kind of growth hack culture works so well in startups, because you've got a very small team and you want to be really focused on the things that are going to get you the biggest impact over a very small period amount of, or small defined amount of time. So, you know, and so I think there's a couple of things that I see marketing teams do in the goal and target stage, where if you're a small marketing team, what I see them do, small marketing teams do, is they kind of work across all of the goals at once. So they never really make a big impact on any specific one. So they'll work on things around, how do I get more people at the top of my funnel? How do I get more people like to get through the middle of the funnel? And they'll never make a real impact on any of those. And I think it's the opposite of big marketing teams that, and I've worked in, you know, at big companies before, where they spend too much time thinking about best practice. They spend too much time talking about strategy, and they really don't focus enough on execution. So what happens is they're just really replicating the exact same playbook, the exact same tactics each and every year, because they haven't allowed enough time to actually execute on things and figure out what other things could actually work for them.
Cool. So step number two is insights. What happens there?
Yeah, so I think like what you're doing in the goals and targets is you're setting yourself up with a very clear couple of goals and very clear targets where you'll know if you're successful or not. Insights is probably one of my favorite parts of being a marketer today, specifically like most of my time I spent doing online marketing, where you can kind of pull apart things that work and figure out why they work. So, you know, the best marketers for me, it's when I have a team of 12 now. I've hired everyone on my team, I've hired myself. And one of the traits I look for on people is just this intense kind of curiosity of why. Oh. Is that?
You still there, Kieran?
Yeah, is that me or you?
Everything's fine from here.
Sorry. Keep okay. Going. Yeah, okay. I had noise in my ear there from something else. Yeah, sorry. I think someone was trying to ring me on Skype. So the insights part is, you know, people are really curious about why things work. So for example, you know, why a particular brand is so successful, why they're getting, if you go to Google Trends, you see, hey, why is this brand getting searched so much over the last couple of years? Why a particular piece of content has been shared so widely, why a particular page ranks for certain keywords. You know, the really best marketers will want to know why all of those different things are the way they are. So, for, you know, an example of that could be using a tool like SEMrush. It's a great tool to do competitor research. You can actually go to SEMrush, take all of your competitors and figure out what keywords they're actually ranking for. Not only that, you can kind of correlate that to what keywords they rank for and you rank for and see are they a higher position than you, and then go look at the page, figure out why that's a better result for that keyword. You can go look at what keywords they rank for that you don't, but you should, and again, investigate, like, hey, why does this competitor have so many pages ranking for this keyword? And look at my pages. I must try to figure out why they're not as good as theirs. I think one of the great things about social is we can use tools like Buzzsumo and Social Qualytics. We can go look to see what content from our competitors is getting shared a lot more than ours and try to, again, make good assumptions around why that is, like kind of break apart their content, try to figure out why it works so well for their audience. Even some of the things you can do is take a piece of content from a competitor that's got shared really well and run it through Bitly, and through Bitly then you can look to see who has actually shared that content and go look through their Twitter feeds and see, like, what are the commonalities in terms of the content they're sharing and why that piece of content maybe resonated with them so much that they actually shared it with their audience. So insights is really important step. It's like using all of these different tools that we have access to pull apart results and see why things work the way they work and actually use those insights to make better decisions on the type of marketing that we're going to do to hit that goal and targets from step one.
Great. And so when we've finished the insights part, then it's time to experiment.
Yeah, so I think, you know, you've gathered a bunch of research and now you're going to come up with a bunch of different ways for me to try and hit that goal. So, you know, the best marketers, not everything can be an experiment, because what tends to happen in marketing is there's a certain percentage of your traffic leads are just going to come in from things that you know that work. And what you want to try and do is silo out some of the time for the team to have the freedom to make big bets and run experiments. So on my team, I'll make sure that they're working on projects that we just know historically from things we've done actually work. We know they're actually going to produce good results if we execute on them well. But then I want them to have, you know, one or two big projects that we have no idea if they're just going to bomb or if they're actually going to be successful, because we've not really done them before. So when I first joined HubSpot 2 years ago, we started experimenting a lot with video series and all these different types of content formats. And, you know, some of them won't work, and it's horrible when something you've invested a lot of time in just has terrible results. So I remember I invested a huge amount of time and effort in this great video series for SEO. I thought it was a really great series, and it completely, and we had all these different promotion tactics and it completely bombed. But I learned a lot from that. I learned from the people we promoted to, maybe they liked the written word versus video, and I could make all of these good insights around the different promotion we used and why it didn't work. So experiments are making sure that you're trying to figure out what are some of these clever, these original tactics that I can come up with that are going to help me accelerate my growth. So in that example I used, you know, we imagine that our goal was to increase the number of people sign up to our blog, and the target was to increase that 5% month on month. Then we may use that insights step to gather a bunch of information that, you know, we know that our audience loves SEO. I've looked at my own data. I know that they always are reading SEO content. That's the kind of highest type of content that gets downloaded when we put it behind a forum. I look in Buzzsumo. I look in all these different tools. I figure out that when my competitor's most successful content is related to SEO. So I might create a really great SEO offer, something that's very relevant for that audience. And then I can try a bunch of those different things that I've already mentioned. We can try a on-exit pop-up so that when people try to leave the blog, they kind of get this offer and they can grab it if they subscribe to the blog. We can create a number of teaser blog posts that kind of give away some of that content, but then ask the reader within the blog post, hey, if you want the rest of this, just sign up to our blog. You can try some Twitter cards to promote that content and make them subscriber gated. So again, get people to, we can run a social advertising campaign through Twitter using that kind of content as the hook trying to get them to subscribe to our blog. We could create a landing page where we have people download that SEO content, and when they've downloaded it, they're going to get a kickback email, and the kickback email is trying to cross-promote the blog. So again, you're in experiment phase, you're trying to figure out, like, what are the things that I can do to really accelerate myself towards that goal? Like, I know I'm probably going to get 70% towards the goal just by doing the things that we know that work, but I want to make up that 30%, and I want to discover new tactics that I can actually then rinse and repeat that's going to work for a defined period of time to help me grow faster.
Great. And finally, the fourth and final step then is promoting like hell.
Yeah.
Please elaborate.
So promotion for me is, you know, one of the most important topics in marketing today. If you want to be a good marketer, you need to be like Kanye West. You need to be a really great, well, he's a self-promoter. So if you think of your own content as yourself, you have to be a great promotion of the things that you or your team do. So, and, you know, I actually wrote a blog post about this really on why recently on why it may be time to hire a content distribution team. So I have a team or a person that's dedicated to nothing more than promotion, because as we become, you know, more and more, as we live in a world that's more and more kind of content heavy and more marketing budget goes in or towards the production of content, it's going to be important to figure out how we can actually promote that to the people we actually want to see it. So, and again, this is a bit of a shameless plug, but if they want to go into my slideshare, I've done in Boston last year, I did a presentation called The Art and Science of Promotion, where it had a bunch of different tactics. And it's hard to go through. There's probably an endless amount of promotion tactics you could go through. So it's hard to go through them on a podcast about so many different, so like growth hacking as a whole. But I guess one quick example I'll share that most people can use is that, and we're using this a lot for our own kind of big content assets that we promote, is if you think about promotion of content and the success or failure of that promotion, most of it actually hinges on a title and a snippet, because you don't get to see the content until you've engaged with the promotion. So the promotion's already done its job by the time you're consuming the content. What you'll usually see within the promotion across social advertising, email, across Google organic results, across all of these different places where you promote a large content asset, is actually the title and the description of that content usually helps you make up your mind. So you really want to figure out, you really want to make that as enticing as, you know, as possible to your audience. And that's why Upwordy have managed to grow a whole brand by just figuring out how to create great titles. So what we do a lot of is before we do our core promotion push, we'll split test different titles through Twitter, through Facebook, through email to try to collect data on what title and description of the actual content asset works best. And then when we find out the one that works best, we'll put all of our, you know, promotion efforts behind that one, and that tends to get us the best results. So that's one of the kind of tips that I think are applicable to anyone who's running promotion.
Okay. And so that's the guide to growth spurts. Now, what's the guide to not getting it wrong? Where do you see companies making mistakes?
Yeah, I think if you sat a number of marketers down and asked them this question, they'd have a number of different answers. So I think my one is just based upon some of the things that I've seen personally, companies, why they haven't, not so much get wrong, because the problem is they're not actually trying. So, and I think that's the bigger part, is that companies aren't hiring the people with the right skill sets to actually kind of ingrain this culture within the company itself. They need to hire people who are marketers, but are also very technical, who are very, again, curious about how things work and how they can make them work better. And what tends to happen, because they don't silo time to actually run some experiments and give their team the freedom to fail. Like, that's a really big one. It's, hey, you guys can run these couple of big projects over the next couple of months or a quarter, and we don't expect any results from them. We just want you to figure out what are some things that we could do that we're not doing now. And because they don't do that, what they do is they end up with a an annual plan that they just kind of roll out each and every year, and it's the exact same stuff. And that's what mean that that's why a lot of companies get left behind their competitors who are working at a different pace.
Yeah, I definitely, and I think it's about having the people who are, yeah, I guess like the people you hired into your team who are curious and want to test things and so on.
Yeah.
But it's also about the culture of the organization, because sometimes you hire those people and but the company can't cope with it.
Yeah, exactly. Wrong. Yeah, that's exactly right. I actually think that's the most important thing, is the company doesn't have a culture that's going to appeal to those people when they get in there. Those people are going to leave and go somewhere else.
Yeah.
And the big thing is, the really big thing is, like, a lot of the reasons that marketers join HubSpot is because they can't believe that our for a company that's quite big now, our sign-off process is basically go do it. Like, if you think it's a good idea, go do it. Whereas in other companies, you'll have to be, you'll be trying to implement something that has to be signed off by four different people before it ever gets done. And it really kills the kind of enjoyment for the people who actually really like experiment and try new things.
That's interesting. And if we look at, and you've already mentioned a few examples, but can you mention any other companies or maybe people who are doing greater growth hacking?
Yeah, I guess the thing to say is, it's when I would think about how do I learn from all of the great content, and that's one of the things that Growth Hacking's done. It's really made people step up their game, and I feel the content people are producing is a lot better. And I would think about if I'm trying to learn from Growth Hacks, I would think less around the company and more about the tactics and the thought process, how someone actually came up with that tactic that worked. But I guess I'll give you a few examples that from historical companies that I haven't talked about, and they're still being used today. So if you think about, you know, Dropbox and PayPal, how they managed to scale really quickly, they used incentives. So PayPal had $10 for each new customer account in their early days. Dropbox gave out additional space. Like brands like Mint.com, who are a really great brand, and even HubSpot, also how we grew so fast was, you know, when we were first in our kind of early years, 2006, 2007, it wouldn't be very common for a company like ours to produce so much content for their audience, and the same with Mint.com. So that was a really new kind of innovative thing, is where you would figure out who are your ideal personas, produce great content for them. One of the ones I love is Udemy, so the online learning platform. And back there, if anyone gets to read their growth story, you should. It's online somewhere. I think Mixergy did an interview with them. And even in their early days, it sounds so simplistic, but they, if you think about, theirs is a chicken and an egg race, because they need to have great content to sell courses, but no one's going to create content for them if they don't have an audience. And what they did for the first 6 months was basically just cold called lectures and cold called authors and try to convince them to take content they already had and put it into Udemy as courses. So I think in terms of people like Noah Kagan, who's xmint.com, xFacebook, AppSumo, SumoMe, well, he's got a lot of these growth hacks into SumoMe now, which is a WordPress plugin. He releases really great content. I tend to go to inbound.org and growthhackers.com to kind of just look at tactics versus individual people doing it.
Okay, that's great. And what trends do you see for the next maybe 2 to 3 years in growth hacking?
Yeah, and I think the exciting thing about this is I don't have an answer, because it's Excel, everything moves so fast now, it's totally unpredictable. And I guess that the combination of that we're just so, we will share, if you think about the amount of value that marketers actually give away by just doing complete write-ups of tactics that have worked for them, like, here's this thing that works really well for my company, and I'm going to put it into content so everyone else can copy it. And I think the combination of that kind of culture now within marketing, and the fact that there's so many more people joining marketing from different fields, so like engineering, people who I myself studied IT at college, like there's different, it's accelerating the type of learnings we have, because we have people who are running experiments but then looking at the data and figuring out if they work or not. So I feel like no one can really predict where we're going to go in the next 3 years, but there is I feel like it's going to be the exact same way it is now. There's just going to be a bunch of new tactics people are finding out that work, people are sharing, and again, when you share them with a wider marketing community, you're gonna have to go find something else, because if you're one of the last ones to adopt that, chances are that it's not working that well anymore.
So change is the only thing you're sure.
Yeah, and I think that goes for anyone who works in digital.
Yeah.
It's, you know, when I first joined digital, I was an SEO and I could rank sites pretty easily at the top of Google using things that would not work anymore, which is horrible, because it used to be so much fun, but things just change so fast.
Yeah, yeah. Right, so coming back to your NLP, can you share the most successful NLP technique that's, you know, maybe that's worked in your career or that applies to marketers anywhere?
Goal setting is hard to go into, it's kind of a mindset, but I'll give a quick one that I think is good for content marketers, which is this thing I've talked before about called chunking. So chunking is something in NLP you use with an NLP to think of solutions to problems quite fast. And there's what it allows you to do is think laterally pretty quickly. So you're actually trying to think of solutions to problems you have faster than you normally would be. And there's two parts of chunking that help content marketers who are kind of in a niche that's hard to create content for. And it's this idea of being able to chunk up and chunk down and then come up with new ideas. So one of the ones, so I used to have a pretty successful fashion site, and I used this to try to create, an infographic that appealed to a wider audience. So we had a fashion site that sold sneakers. I call them sneakers because we were mostly trying to sell into the US. And what you do is you kind of go, okay, I've got this product, sneakers. And sneakers is actually an okay product to create a lot of content on, but if sneakers was a niche product, you could say, hey, this is an example of, and sneakers is an example of fashion. What's fashion an example of? Fashion's an example of tribalism, because it's very people, if you think of the hipster thing, it's very tribal. And then you think laterally, and then you go, you have this tribalism, and then you can start to chunk back down. So what is an example of tribalism? Skaters. What is an example of skaters? And then you could say, well, different types of skateboards. And then you could say, I'm going to create an infographic for sneaker geeks on this type of sneaker works best with this type of skateboard. That's not actually the infographic I did, but that allows you to move up and down and get outside of your core audience very quickly. So you're trying to, if you're in a very specific niche, what you want to come up is chunk up and then come back down and see if you can overlap with other industries that are similar to yours but gives you a broader appeal. And I think a great example of this is, and I'm probably going to get the name of it wrong, but there's a site called Movoto. They're a real estate agent blog. And they're selling real estate. So they're a real estate agent blog, and they went from something like 2,000 visitors a month to 18 million a month.
Wow.
And a big part of their thing was, how do we appeal to a wider audience? So they've created things like, if you were a superhero, what would your property look like across the galaxy? Like appealing to comic geeks. And I think that's a good way to try to get yourself out of this kind of, I talk to a lot of marketers and they're, I can't create content in the niche I'm in. It's a good way to try to get yourself thinking through, actually there's these other audiences that would have some interest in what I'm doing, but I can appeal to a greater number of people.
Yeah, makes sense. Great. So thanks for that. How can people learn more about your work, maybe about HubSpot, and where can they connect with yourself, Kieran?
Yeah, so I'm on, if people have any questions after this, I'm on Twitter at SearchBrat, or I'm at SearchBrat.com. I think one of the good places to go, I've mentioned it, is inbound.org. It's a great site that collates all the best content, and there's a ton of great growth hacking content that gets posted there. The other thing I would encourage people to do is, we have a podcast called The Growth Show, which is obviously applicable to this, run by our CMO, Mike Volpe. And he interviews the CMOs of other companies who are experiencing like phenomenal growth. And he has some really interesting companies on there, and they're really great interviews. So that's The Growth Show with Mike Volpe. If you just search it on Google, you'll get it.
And guess what Volpe means in Italian?
What?
It means, I think it's fox.
Fox, okay, yeah. I must tell him that.
I read that. Mike. Yeah, I tweeted him that once.
Did you? Yeah. Mike the Fox?
Exactly. That's great. Thank you so much for your time today, Kieran, and I'll catch you next time.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Really enjoyed it.
Right, I hope you picked up some good growth hacking tips there from Kieran. Please let us know what your favorite marketing hack is by tweeting us at LinkHumans. And of course, be sure to use our hashtag SMKnowHow. Thank you very much for listening, and I'll catch you next time.